You can see there are some of the issues that I've highlighted. Firstly, I'm just starting there saying, you know, the committee commenced with this particular focus on the quarterly reports. We looked at the budgetary and review recommendation reports. The committee dealt with the two bills, the Defense Amendment Bill, as well as the Military Discipline Bill. And then later on, our work was suspended due to the COVID for about 2 months. And then after that, we started having virtual meetings. When we came back, we dealt with the statutory required engagements with the budget. And then we also dealt for the first time with the Khoisan Nation Shelf Defense Unit. Some of the main issues that we also looked at is, for instance, the HR challenges. We had the workshop scheduled with various stakeholders, and this was followed by the Kotla of the two defense committees with the defense force in Pretoria, and it mainly revolved around the force design and the force structure. As you mentioned earlier, Jay, later on we are going to have a meeting with CLOC, you know, with regards to the supply chain management as well as the procurement issues. So that's also an issue that we looked at. And due to the COVID, there was also a special adjustment budget for the two departments, and we also had to look at that, and we did that. We also had an engagement with the minister about the devolution of certain responsibility from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to the Defence Works Formation. And if you look at the Department of Military Veterans, remember, say, there's a lot of structural and systemic issues ranging from the organizational structure that's not aligned with the service delivery model, the filling of accessory leadership vacancies, change management, the skill audit process, as well as the lack of proper consequent management. We also then engaged with two of the DMG's entities for the first time, and that was with the Appeal Board and the Advisory Council. We also engaged with the Office of the Military Ombud, as well as the Defence Force Service Commission. And here we were particularly concerned about the follow-through or the binding nature of the recommendations. As I said, we dealt with the annual reports, the budget review and recommendation reports, and then we, over the period 27 to 29 November, we had an oversight visit to three units, and then as well as to three units along the borders. And there, for instance, at one military hostel, we were specifically very frustrated to note that the RAM project has not been completed and has been going on for several years. And that led to the outsourcing of military, of medical services. As we say, that's not only very expensive, but it's also one of the reasons why the hospital is losing a lot of skills. Similarly, say the challenge at the border, we say that we will pay attention to that. And in conclusion of this section, when we concluded the year, we dealt with the DRRRs, and then we had a final meeting with the Khoisan Nation Shelf Defense Unit, as well as the SACC Military Veterans Association. Today, the format of this report makes it really repetitive, so you'll see that a lot of the issues that have been mentioned in the first section are also repeated here. There you can see it's about the budget, the strategic plan, the annual performance plan, the quarterly reports, the special adjustment budget, force structure, force design, evolution, the appeal board, the CCB Arms Corps. And then they're basically just confirming some of the issues that we looked at in paragraph 2 during the 2020 parliament term. And then for our purposes going forward, these are the issues that the committee will focus on, and one of the issues that's still outstanding and that leads to regular expenditure by the Auditor General is the budgeting of compensation of employees. And the second one is the HR resource plan, which was presented to us on the 3rd of February by Chief HR Admiral Kubo, but I think there are several issues that we want to follow. They briefly mentioned the rejuvenation plan as well, and then, as I said, on the 26th of May, we will engage with Chief Locke on Ops Pisano, but specifically then, with regards to procurement issues, we will engage with him on the 2nd of June around procurement. follow-up on the RAM project at One Military Hospital. An issue that's concerning all of us is the finalizing and the cleansing of the military veterans database and then the organizational structure of the DMV. Although they are saying their engagement with both National Treasury and EPSA to resolve this. And that there's a meeting scheduled for the 19th of May where we're actually going to look at that. But related to that, JJ, is also the Military Veterans Act, and you will see later on, it will also come out and strategic plan and the end of performance plan of the committee, you know, is they would really like to see the amendments to the Military Veterans Act, but I think it will address some of these pertinent issues. I say another issue that we need to follow up is something that Mr. Marais mentioned, and those are the various projects, hotel, bio, roofmaster, and there is a meeting scheduled for the 13th of May in the joint, where we said we're going to look specifically at bio, and maybe at that time we can also then request them, or before we request them, to give feedback on bio and hotel as well. And the other thing is to follow up the status and the plans with the SDA, the Special Defense Account. I think that's an issue that we need to deal with, because I believe in this year there's only about 1 billion rand in the SDA, and very soon it will be phased out and closed. And with regards to the castle, there are some issues with regards to its going concern, and I think that's something that we'll have to follow up. With both the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Ombud, there is about the enforceability of the recommendation. See, I'm not going to repeat this, but these key challenges basically relate to what I just said above. So it's just broken down now to the various departments and the entities. And there is just the recommendations that we are making with regards to the two departments and the entities. As I said, it's very repetitive, but there you can see, we need to see the finalization of the force design and the force structure. And we do believe that once we have that, because remember this was also mentioned in the defense review, that the Chief of Defense Force is responsible for the blueprint force design and force structure. So if that is resolved, I think it will give us more clarity how to address the HR-related issues, especially the compensation of employees. And then also the continuous engagement with national communities with regards to appropriate funding for the DMV. And then also the executive of the person apart was saying that we should really look at you know, sourcing alternative funding through the work of Defence Force Work Formation, you know, through outsourcing the service to other departments, switching up estimates, as well as maybe engaging Commander-in-Chief, you know, as to whether they would be open to this kind of option where Defence Force Work Formation can also then accrue revenue for the department, especially in the light of the restricted budget, you know, to address some of the issues. And then just saying that there should be continuous engagement on options to streamline the DOD's activities. With regard to the DMV, again, it's about the organizational structure and the following of the critical posts. Like in this case, we find that there's still not no permanent DG, and there's only two of the DDG posts are also vacant. And then something that the Deputy Minister also referred to is there is a need for organizational change management within the department, because there are some issues there that needs to be dealt with. And then also consequent management, we've heard several times that it's not being done properly, and we need to also follow up that. And then, Chair, maybe we should also close, I mean, it does here the skills audit issue. There are some outstanding issues that I do believe that we need to finalize, and then there also need to be pressure on the department to finalize this military veterans database, because to my mind that's the beginning of proper planning and budgeting. And if you don't finalize it in place of the database, we're going to continue to have problems with all of that. With regards to the castle, as I mentioned, the going concern issue that needs to be addressed, and then also alternative funding options. Our score, the funding of approved project as mentioned above, and then also alternative funding options, and then also we need to follow up on the statements and plans for the special defense account. And then both the Military Ombud and the Defense Force Service Commission, it's about the enforceability of the recommendation. Chair, the next section I'll just skip through because the members are quite familiar with this. Each time the department presents its quarterly report and annual report, then they speak to us about their mandate and so on. So first, the mandate of Department of Defense, Department of Military Veterans, and there the two entities, as well as the Military Ombud, the Reserve Force Council, and the Service Commission. Chair, with regards to the functions of the committee there on page 7, basically related to the four main functions of the committee, and that is the oversight function, the lawmaking function, the public participation function, as well as the international cooperation function. The method of our work, we're just saying there first, what is the purpose of this report, and then we move over to the key statistics, and this is, indicates the number of meetings that we had in the four quarters. Then the first term we had 4, second term we had 12, the third term we had 2, and the fourth term we had 10. And members should be aware that because of the COVID, these number of meetings fluctuated. Then the legislation that we process, the first term we process those two laws, and we send it, the one we send back to the minister, and the other one we finalize. And then other referrals, from the speaker, and the one from the speaker is the one that we had with regards to the Khoisan Nation Self Defense Unit. Chair, this is just a list of the stakeholders, and members are aware of all those on top of that highlighted section, who are all our stakeholders there. And then in addition to that, we're just saying organizations of the customers and clients of those listed above, as well as academic and research entities involved in the defense sector. Like we had last week, the webinar with CICLA, as well as the Center for Military Studies, and then also the non-governmental organizations. So then we just refer to the briefings and public hearings, as also part of our work, and then we also look at the legislation. And as I said, so we dealt with this the last time, so members are quite aware of it. Completed the Defense Amendment Bill, and it was ATC'd on the 26th of February. With regards to the Military Discipline Bill, it was not completed, and due to various reasons, one of them being not proper consultation within the department itself, there was a request to the minister to withdraw this bill. See, and then just the challenges emerging from those activities where we engaged the two bills. Firstly, with regards to the Defense Amendment Bill, we said we experienced challenges with the new amendment that was introduced by the department during the processing of the bill. And this led to the committee having to prolong the process and seek permission from the House to consider the newly introduced amendment. And then the next one, the Military Discipline Bill, just saying we discovered that during the public submission stage, the department had not sufficiently consulted internally on the bill. And due to a number of submissions to this effect, the committee requested the department to withdraw the bill. Chair, the next section is just deal with the oversight trips that we've undertaken. And members are quite familiar with this. We undertook it from the 27th to the 29th. And the second column there is just the areas that we visited. What was the objective? And then we list the various recommendations. And then the committee itself considered and approved this report on the 10th of February 21. And then the report was then ATC'd on the 25th of March 2021. Chair, so from here, the next couple of pages, 13 pages, is basically just dealing with this oversight trip and the recommendations. So I'll move to page 25, is where we carry on with the rest, because these are all familiar to members. Okay, then on page 25, we're just saying that some of the issues that we do believe that the committee should follow up is firstly the dilapidated fence along the borderline, the unsuitable mode of transport for troops at the borders, the lack of force multipliers for effective security over the borderlines, cooperation between security forces from neighboring countries, and then the lengthy procurement process, as well as the living conditions along the borders. So those are some of the issues that we believe the committee should follow up. Okay, we then come to the next section, day 7. Under study tours, it's not applicable. International agreements also not applicable. set sticking appointments not applicable. Obligations confirmed under committee by legislation is also not applicable. And we move to the next page in the summary of outstanding issues. As we mentioned above, for the Department of Defense is the COE issue that we need to speak to the DOD and National Treasury, the human resources plan, the rejuvenation plan, the lengthy procurement processes, as well as devolution responsibility from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to Defense Force Work Formation. Something I mentioned earlier, also DOD, about the structure, vacancies, the amendment of the Act, the database, skills order process, and there's just with regards to Arms Corps and the CDCB, they will also mention some of the challenges that we do think we should follow up. So if I move on, petitions is not a process, so it's not applicable, intervention, not applicable, and then other matters referred to by the speaker and the chairperson. This was referred to us in July 2019 and was reported on it. And the content of the referral was basically a request by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit for former members of the SACC to be integrated into the SANDF through a proposal for a bill. And so we've dealt with this issue and we reported it. And it was reported in the ACC 179 of 2020 on the 2nd of December. Challenges emerging today. This is now specifically with regards to the matter referred to by the speaker, is that due to the suspension by the physical meetings in Parliament, due to COVID, the committee can only conduct meetings with the Khoisan National Self-Defense Unit. At the point where the committee decided to hold a meeting with the Khoisan National Self-Defense Unit, the meeting could not succeed due to technical challenge experienced by the union's representative. But it has been dealt with in the second meeting and it concluded successfully. So then we just saying, the committee recommended that the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit and the SDCC Military Veterans Association, who were not integrated and who qualified as military veterans, should be assisted to apply for military veteran station. We haven't heard anything from them yet, sir, but I think it's maybe something that we should also look to in the future. And then other methods referred to by the House Chairperson is not applicable. And then lastly, Chair, is just the recommendation itself, but this is more internally for the committee itself. And it's something I think Ms. Lekwase mentioned it at a strategic session, is that we need to draft and implement a resolution register, you know, just to ensure effective following up of the committee's recommendation. And secondly, we should ensure that department entities, whenever they come to present to us, well in advance, they should actually make the presentations available. And then the third one is that we should seriously consider considering and adopting our minutes and reports within 3 weeks of the meeting, if it's possible, so that we can actually relay, you know, the decisions of the committee to the necessary stakeholders. And then also just emphasizing the importance of a quorum at meetings. Okay, this is the committee's annual report for 2020. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, colleagues, this is the annual report for 12 on the activities of the committee from January to December 2020. Colleagues, comments, colleagues?
Chairperson?
Yes, Mr. Mare?
Chairperson, I think this is not the first time that we have looked at this, and I think Peter has done an outstanding work in terms of capturing everything that we have dealt with. You know, he's even left me in a situation where I cannot criticize, I cannot add. I can only say thank you very much, well done, great work, and I recommend or propose for acceptance of this report.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Mr. Schlemmer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Anyway, I want to share the same, what I mean,
Honourable Marais has raised, you know, if one looks, I mean, at the presentation, I mean, is what we need, I mean, as members of the portfolio. So I really appreciate, I mean, the work done by the President, I mean, Daniel, and also share, I mean, again, the same statement with Mr. Marais. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any other comment to the report? Right, it doesn't look like there's any comment. Thank you very much for a job well done. Colleagues, Daniel, I think your report was spot on. Colleagues, can you then quickly move to the next item?
What I would like to do, Chair, I'll do the strategic plan for the committee, and then Yalom will do the annual performance plan for the committee.
Okay. All right. Is that in order?
Chair, is it visible?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Chair, once again, members are familiar with many of the issues that are going to be raised. So just for to take time consideration into account, I'm not going to mention everything, but just highlight some of the main issues. Okay, the first section of this strategic plan, that is now for the 5 years, you know, from 2019 to 2040. There is this with regards to Parliament's strategic plan, because we need to anchor it in that. And then with the second, we will talk about the committee itself, the mandate of the committee, the departments and the entities. We'll briefly look at the BRRRs, customers and stakeholders, and the services, products, situation analysis, and then the committee service and outputs. And then the last one there, from page 11 onwards, is the, to my mind, is the most important part of the strategic plan, is the four outputs on legislation, oversight, public involvement, participation, as well as international cooperation. We're all aware of the mandate of Parliament, and we're just saying there in the highlighted section that Parliament does, you know, execute its mandate by passing legislation, overseeing the executive action, and the facilitation of public involvement, corporate governance, and international participation. We're all aware what is the mission of Parliament, as well as the vision. The next session just deal with the policy priorities for the sixth Parliament. And then there are 1.4 are just some of the values that Parliament adhere to, and that includes openness, responsiveness, accountability, teamwork, professionalism, and integrity. The HA, some of your members are quite familiar with, is the mandate of the committee itself, the mandate of the Department of Defense, military veterans and the entities. Then 2.5, we just briefly refer to the BRRRs, and I'd just like to highlight the section 5 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act require the National Assembly through its committees to annually assess the performance of each national department. A committee must submit a report of its assessments, known as the BRRR, to the National Assembly. This our customers and our stakeholders, emphasizing that we serve the following customers and clients. Firstly, the people of South Africa, the National Assembly, which first matters to the committee, the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, with whom we work closely and jointly, military veterans who deserve to enjoy a dignified life or existence for the sacrifice they have made, defense industry stakeholders, as well as the soldiers and civilians working within the Department of Defense and military veterans. And as with the annual report that I've just mentioned, they are just a list of stakeholders, and then I just emphasize the other three. And then the service and products rendered by the committee, it relates to those three functions that we've mentioned before. So I'm not going to delve into the situation analysis, because this comes out, you know, in our activities with an engagement with the departments and entities. You know, just saying there from the start, the Department of Defense, you know, since it was established 27 years ago, they have numerous achievements. And the next one is just Department of Military Veterans, referring there to Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act, which basically refers to all the benefits, or the 11 benefits that they deliver to the military veterans. And then there's just a reference to the various challenges that they have. Arms Corps itself, issues that the members are very familiar with, the Cancer Control Board, and we will discuss this also when we do the presentation on the analysis of their budget and annual performance plan. There's just a Council of Control Board, the Defence Force Service Commission, and 2.9, the unpaid age. We're just saying the way we conduct our business is through a cycle of program committee activities related mainly to budget, strategic plans, annual performance plans, annual reports, and these are complemented by meetings, oversight visits, and study tours that provide additional information for the inclusion in the beautiful R. There on 210 is just the structure of the committees, the chairperson and the whip, and then all the various members with their political parties mentioned as well, and in the right-hand column, just the committee support staff. Okay, here we come to the more important part in my mind for the strategic plan, and this is about the outputs, and the first one is about legislation. I need to mention upfront here that this is mainly dependent on the departments and the entities when they submit it. So we can't actually say how they, when they're going to introduce it. But what we're saying there, firstly, that in the last year that we've dealt with two bills there that I've mentioned before. And then for this coming year, we hope that they will also introduce the military discipline bill, which they withdrawn, and we should maybe ask them, you know, when they will do that, if it's not this year. They're saying in the next column here, these legislation that's being processed by our committee is all determined by the polls submitted to our committee. And this relates to the public hearings, you know, on the various polls. So if they submitted, and then we will conduct that. Okay, then next column, it's just maybe something that was mentioned in passing several times. These are the various acts that have been mentioned by the various stakeholders, you know, that they do believe that it requires some consideration either to repeal or to review. And the first one there is the Castle Management Act. Several times it has been mentioned that it's not quite aligned, you know, with the kind of service and their mandate, and there's maybe a need to amend the Castle Management Act. The next one here is something I mentioned earlier with regards to the special defense account, seeing that the amount there is diminishing and there are intentions, or we note some intentions that it might be closed down. So if that comes to pass, maybe we should consider the repeal of that specific act. The next one here is something that you've mentioned before in the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. You know, how do we relate, you know, mercenary activities? So that act includes prohibition of mercenary activities, regulations of certain activities in countries of armed conflict, Act 27 of 2006. And this was actually followed up by the NCACC Amendment Act 73 of 2008. But whether these two are aligned or whether the latter one is actually being implemented, I think there is the crux of the problem. Also, Chair, the Military Ombud has mentioned that there's maybe also a need to relook at the Military Ombud Act. So when we come to the DMV with regards to legislation, as I mentioned before, you know, this is dependent, you know, on them submitting a bill to us. But there is something that we need to follow up to, and this is with regards to the amendment of the Military Veterans Benefit Regulation. I do think this is something that is urgent, because it helps to actually, or smooth to streamline, you know, the delivery of benefits, you know, to military veterans. The next one here is 4.2 oversight outputs, and here we're just making suggestions as to issues that we think that the committee can engage with. And members will remember that this is basically derived from our strategic planning session, you know, where members indicated, you know, that these are the issues that we should follow up. So, Chair, how this works in the left-hand column is just the department or the entity itself, and then the performance indicator, the baseline, basically what happened previous year, and then for those 5 years, Remember, we started in the middle of 2019, so it's broken down 2019-20 up to 2024 to 2025. So what we're saying here, the first one, Jim, is that engagement with national teams and the re-sensing funds for specific purposes. For instance, that the naval and air platform see and fly flying hours. And then what we do then, Jim, is we schedule, we think that the committee should schedule a meeting, you know, per year, once per year on those issues. Similar, Chair, with regard to the SANDF, the Human Resource Action Plan, we all say that, you know, each year we should at least follow up on that and have a briefing or update, you know, on that specific issue. The next issue, something that we did recently, is about the audit committees and the internal audit, you know, addressing us, you know, on some of the challenges, how they operate, and then some of the challenges that they are experiencing, and also how they are doing, dealing, you know, or assisting department to track, you know, fraud and corruption, and then especially consequent mention if these things are detected. The next one is just to monitor the defense of work formation, but then we also include that maybe still once a year have an oversight visit to where these activities are actually taking place. So for each of the following years, we said we should have an oversight visit, and then we should also have at least one presentation. The next one is just a briefing on the implementation of the AG recommendations, and especially consequence management, and for each of the years, we schedule a meeting. The next one is also something we're familiar with, is they oversee the border safeguarding, the use of technology, and then we suggest as well that we should at least once a year have an oversight visit, you know, to the borders, maybe different parts of the border, like this next time maybe go to the Sotho, Botswana, and so on, and see what's happening there. But we say going forward, because we do believe that it's a very important issue, and I think Mr. Marie, for instance, mentioned Cabo Delgado, and then, you know, what do we do with our borders, our land, air, sea borders, what do we do there? You know, so maybe we should follow up, and that's why we say there should be at least two meetings per year on this one. The next one for Chief Lock is procurement and presentations, and we say going forward, we say at least two meetings on that, because I do believe there are numerous problems there, huge problems there, and challenges, and we need to see how they are dealing with that, and they should need to come and brief us on that. And then here is something that we feel strongly about, is defense review. We do believe that departments should come and just brief us on the status they have. We get bogged down on the first milestone, we haven't moved out of that, so we are very concerned what's happening there. But we know it is part of the reason is a lack of proper funding. The next one is flying hours and Navy hours, once is here, and then the military onboard and activities, and the next one is the service commission, also have been twice a year, and then the treating of assets. Remember, they also gave us a response with regards to this, when we said, you know, they should also maybe use the defense work formation, you know, to accrue revenue, they give services to other departments, and they're saying all these functions have not devolved, yes, or delegated to the Defence Force formation, so they can't really say how that's going to progress. And then an important issue is the cyber warfare strategy implementation, and we're saying, you know, in certain years we should just have a briefing on that. When we come to the military veterans here, we've only done one oversight visit to the headquarters, and we do believe that for the next years, for the rest of the FTF period, we should at least have a meeting to either the headquarters or the provincial offices. So you would know there's a lot of problems with provincial offices, and I think only three have been properly established, so we need to go what's going on there. And then the database, something that I mentioned before, really important to us for planning and budgeting purposes, a briefing each year, the same with the DOD, the audit committee, internal audit, briefing us on that. Similar to the DOD, implementation of the AG's recommendations. And then one issue specific to the DOD is the status of policies, service level agreements, and memorandums of understanding for the delivery of benefit and services. Chair, this is very important to us. One will note that in the APP, they say they're going to review several policies, they even new policies, and we need to be updated under the status of this. There we scheduled meetings of the appeal board and the advisory council for the next few years, and we say we should at least twice a year engage with them to be updated on their challenges, their experience, etc. And then Sangwa, okay, we haven't had a briefing from them, and we do believe it's important to have one. Something new is the gender parity and youth development through business opportunities and training, and we said we should have a briefing, you know, once a year on those issues. And then the capacitation and skills enhancement. They were mentioned in the past that the UG maybe doesn't have all the necessary capacities and competencies there, and maybe there's something that they should look at. And then share something very close to the heart, and that is the enhancement of communication with military veterans, you know, through the HQ itself and as well as through the provincial offices. And we do believe that we should have a meeting once a year on this one. And then the new one is the presidential task team on military veterans, and we just think we should have a regular briefing on these. With regards to Arms Corps, firstly is oversight visit, and then dockyard and IMT briefing, and then the IP exploitation and protection, and then sustainability of a project such as Rufus de Biro. There might be new ones added, but I think once a year we should also have a briefing on those. And then the relationship Arms Corps and the NEL, you know, the reporting and the migration, and there was talk that it should migrate back into the defense environment, and that we should follow up on that. The Carter Control Board, we just suggest that in certain years we should have an oversight visit to them, and then we should also have a brief maybe once a year on their going concern status, because there are challenges in that regard. And another issue there, Chair, is with regards to security at the castle. There were various incidents there, and we just need to ask them to report progress on how they actually going to secure the castle of Guru. The next one, Chair, relates to the public involvement participation, and as mentioned before, these related very closely to the department entity submitting bills, and from there we'll then, you know, call for public participation and so on, Chair. So there we just say, depending on when they submitted it. The last one, Chair, is basically international cooperation, and what we did here, Chair, is to make some suggestions, you know, as to oversight or study tours to other countries. And the first one that we suggest, Chair, is maybe at the end of this year, we should consider having an oversight visit to the DRC, where our troops are being deployed specifically in Kinshasa, and then the 4th Intervention Brigade in Goma. So that is for this year. And then for the next year, Jay, we suggest that maybe we should highlight the issue of military veterans, and maybe go and visit the United States of America, because they've got a very comprehensive program to support, you know, the military veterans. Vietnam is also very well known, Jay, for how they are looking after the military veterans, you know, after the liberation struggle, how they're actually addressing, as well as Algeria. The Joint Standing Committee on Defense, I think it was in 2006, did conduct an oversight visit or study tour to Algeria, and they found very valuable lessons there that could input to the DMV's function. So the year after that, 2022-23, and then we just suggest there that maybe we should go and visit countries, you know, where we can learn more about force structure and force design. It's something that the department has been engaging with. And also mentioned in defense review, and I think maybe we can do that. The year after that, arms control regime, the challenges there, suggestion is that we should maybe go to a country or two that, you know, have very strong arms control regime, and then maybe learn some lessons from there. The last one, 24-25, the suggestion is that we should maybe go to countries how they manage their reserves, and the suggestion there is just maybe we should go to the Norway or the UK. The next one, Chair, with regards to Arms Corps, all we're saying is attached to the above study tours, we should also maybe think or investigate whether there are defense industries in those countries that we can actually go and benchmark with and learn some lessons with. And then similar to that, we should also look, you know, if we think about a castle, go and visit countries, if we are there, to look at their defense endowment properties, how they preserve their castles, and so forth, and maybe learn from there. So Chair, this is the end of this presentation of the strategic plan. Chair, I don't know whether you're going to allow questions now or you're going to allow Billy Allen to present the annual performance plan, but of course the two are very closely related. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I only have one question. Well done, an outstanding job. This is going to streamline the operations of the committee. Do you need the decision today or this week, or we can still grant you the decision next week, Peter? What are your timelines?
I don't understand you.
Do you need the decision today, or we can, or this week, or we can still grant you next week?
Chair, the approach that we've taken is that the committee should consider and maybe adopt the strategic plan. Because if it's similar to our quarterly programs, Chair, you know, it's flexible. It's not cast in iron. As we go along, if things change, then we can change it. But the idea is, Chair, that it should be considered and adopted today, Chair.
I'm asking for your timeline. I'm checking your timeline. I know you have to send this in. Do you need the decision today, or we can still give you next week? In other words, how tight are your timelines like?
Given that we should have done this in 2019, the timelines are very tight.
Okay. So, all right, Mr. Mare and Mr. Mwete.
Thank you, Chair. Excellent work. I've got just two questions. The first one is, and that's maybe just not a general one, where Peter has referred to the ANSPO projects where they must brief us on current projects and potential projects. I'm just wondering, what is the role of the Defence, the DOD, on that, and that they must actually brief us long before ANSPO briefs us, so because they must actually share with us their planning, and I just want like to see that being reflected somewhere, that there's an obligation on the Department of Defense that they must share with us their potential projects or planned projects. That's the one point. The other point I just wanted to ask Peter, where he refers to the Castle Management Act and the prohibition of mercenary activities and regulation of certain activities act. I just wanted to ask the question, the Foreign Military Assistance Regulation Act, does that impact on that, or must we consider the two, or is there whether it overlaps on each other, or, you know, how must we look at the at that act that he has referred to, and maybe consider the Foreign Military Assistance Act as well, the Regulation of Foreign Military Assistance Act, because that certainly impacts on mercenaries or so-called mercenaries activities.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mr. Mutle?
Yeah, thank you, Chair and honorable members. Maybe let me first acknowledge and appreciate the work that has been put, the efforts on this report. It's a very detailed and good report. Chair, I just wanted to raise a point around also AMSCO, because I'm aware Project Biro has been launched. I think some delivery has been made so far. And I think we are lacking in terms of site visits, because in terms of scheduling meetings and discussing these matters, I think we are doing very well. But we are lacking in terms of doing visit to actually have a feel of some of the things that we are talking about. And I think this particular report is attempting to resolve that particular challenge, because I deem it very important and necessary for us to sometimes go to these areas we talk about Project Wolf Baster, which we know the challenges that are faced by the by AMSCO and the department with regard to that particular project. Taking into consideration the fact that the COVID has also impacted on us in terms of us doing those particular visits, but we must try by all means to ensure that we balance this meeting with those visits. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much,
Thabo.
Any other comment? Okay, it doesn't look like there's any other comment. I think Thabo is raising the point, and it's similar to the point that Mr. Mare raised earlier. Brian, I'm now talking to you. If we follow the program of the legislature, of parliament, strictly, will not do what the things that Thabo is talking about. It's very limiting. It was easy when we were all in Cape Town before COVID, because we can go out, do the thing and come back and be in the house at 2 o'clock. But that too limited us to visit around Cape Town, and you know, so again, it's, yes, it allowed us to do some visit, but only in Cape Town, in order for us to be in the house, in you know, to attend the sitting of Parliament at 2. Now, given that, I think we should consider as a committee to utilize the days when Parliament is on a short break. I think I saw other committees doing that. I think when Maria raised that point, I saw other committees doing that. So it means that we must apply for the committee to be granted, the opportunity to be allowed, must apply to be allowed to utilize at least some of those days when Parliament is on a short break, and we must consider the time when Parliament is on its constituent period, or on a recess, I don't know. Please work on a program, Brian. You know, we all know when the next recess is going to be. Just work on a program. Take one or two or three out of those days, and then come back to us. Only then we can be able to achieve what Honourable Mutle is suggesting, which ties in with what Mr. Mare raised earlier on. But Mare was much broader, because he was not only talking to oversights, only was talking about other matters as well. All right. Are you happy, Mutle, if we approach it this way?
Yeah, no, that will assist the committee a lot, Chair.
Thank you so much, Thabo. All right, colleagues, this is the program. We were involved in developing it at the beginning. Now it's been populated, streamlined. The strategic plan streamlined, and with key proposals. I've listened to the comments, and colleagues are accepting it, but it's a working document. We can still revisit it at any time. Is it revisitable, Daniel,
each year we can revisit it and then we can update, you know, according to what's happening today.
All right. Okay. But at any rate, it's given effect to by an annual plan. All right? And, all right. No, I think colleagues,
yes. You're telling us about it. Yes, on those two questions that I've asked, I feel that can be that's part of the program, but I've just missed those two things, and maybe I just need clarity on that from Peter on those two points, if that is possible, please.
My apologies, Mr. Mabe. Peter.
With regards to the first one, I think Mr. Mare is spot on. We should maybe first get a department to come and inform us, you know, with regards to the status of certain projects and so forth, and what do they potentially plan, and then ask for the more specific detail. So I do agree that we should maybe just align our program to include the DOD in those kind of discussions. Okay, with regards to the second question, the Council Management Act, the CCP has been complaining that the act is not quite aligned, you know, with what the current activities. For instance,
Peter, just a point of correction. That was not my question. It was about the prohibition of the Mercenary Act and regulation and the Foreign Military Assistance Act.
No, I thought you started off with the CMA, but it's fine. All I'm saying is, they indicated that the Council Management Act should be revisited. For instance, all the members on the board, you know, some of them are not active participants, but that is the Council Management Act. With regards to the mercenary creation vision of EC Amendment Act of 73-2008, and if my understanding is correct, this act was actually supposed to address some of the lacunas within this prohibition of mercenary activities, but there's a problem with the regulations. So I do think maybe we should just engage maybe the department's legal division and come, you know, and address us on these acts, what they plan to do with it. So there is more the proposal that they come and explain to us what they are doing, what are they planning. With regards to specific those things. Mr. Mare?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
No, thanks. All right. Colleagues, thank you very much. Is it agreed to? Any objection?
Agreed to.
Thank you. Thank you. No objection. Right. Doesn't look like an objection. Thabo, is this your audit?
Yeah, no. It's let me lie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right, colleagues, this is the program is a strategic plan. It's accepted. Thank you very much, Peter, for an outstanding job. I now invite Daniel Velem to take us through the annual plan.
Thank you, Chair. Is my screen visible on your side?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you, Chair and members, and welcome back to Parliament from my side. This is the draft annual performance plan for the committee. I will try to be as quick as possible because, as Peter said earlier, the structure of these reports are very repetitive. So there's a lot of information contained here that is already repeated in the strategic plan that Peter just went through. So just to keep it brief, I'll try to get to the main issues in a second. This is the annual performance plan based on the strategic plan, and I think this will be a valuable aspect to look at for members in just seeing how we plan to go forward over the next rest of this year. In terms of the strategic plan of Parliament, this document starts with an overview of the strategic plan of Parliament that Peter already mentioned, as well as the vision and the policy priorities for the sixth Parliament. Peter also mentioned the values enshrined there and government policy guidelines in terms of the National Development Plan and a medium-term strategic framework and the contributions that is made to this. In terms of recommendations and priorities of departments and entities of the defense portfolio. I think it was touched on as well, but just to highlight the DoD's contribution to MCSS Pillar 1, a strong and inclusive economy. Also, number 2, capabilities of South Africans, and number 3, a capable state, whereas the Department of Military Veterans also contributes to several of the priorities from number 1 to 5 in terms of the development of the state. Similarly, Armed Corps also contributes in terms of the NDP and the CCB in terms of the MCSS priority. Coming to the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, just to look at the mandate of the committee, Peter already touched on that, so I'll skip over that, as well as the customers and stakeholders that Peter already alluded to. In terms of key business objectives, activities, and indicators, the way the committee will go forward, I think it's best to go to the actual tables at the bottom. The scheduling of reports and plans are outlined in the tables below, and you'll see in this one where Peter has the 5 years outline years, we're looking at the 4 quarters, and here we include the drafting of the annual budget report, quarterly reports from the DOT and quarterly reports from the DMV, which is considered at every quarter, annual reports from the DOD, DMV, CCB, Armed Corps, the Defence Force Service Commission, and the Office of the Military Ombuds, which will be considered in the 3rd quarter. The budgetary review recommendations report, which is based on these annual reports, will also be produced in the 3rd quarter. The review of the strategic plan of the committee will be done in the 4th quarter. Peter just spoke about that in his response to Mr. Murray's question. And then the review of annual performance plan of the committee, which was conducted in the 1st quarter with, during the visit of the work station in Pretoria. These are the names of the portfolio committee members and support staff. And then these are the key potential issues on the horizon for the committee in 2021. And the key issues that have extracted, and Peter already touched on many of these, I'll just go through them quickly, is the resubmission of the military disciplinary bill, following up on the status of the act that Peter just discussed, the prohibition on military activities and regulation of certain activities in countries of armed conflict act. The amendment of the Military Veterans Act, finalization of the SANDF force design, DoD human resources, briefing on procurement in the SANDF, the devolution of responsibilities from DPW to the Defence Works Formation, following up on the RAM project, the One Military Hospital, briefing by the Chiefs of the SANDF Joint Operations and Logistics on border situation, consequence management, both in the DoD and DMV, finalization of National Military Veterans Database, which has been an ongoing issue, the DMV organizational structure, funding challenges specifically related to the 3 big acquisition projects, follow-up on the status and plans of the FBA, resolution of issues related to the going concern status of the cargo, the enforceability of recommendations of the military onwards, and you'll see there are some engagements planned on this, the status of recommendations of the Defence Force Service Commission, the CCB's going concern status, and in terms of Armed Corps funding of projects and alternative funding options. So how do we see these activities play out over the rest of the year? Chair, first, in terms of the functions of the committee, first is legislation, and not to repeat what Peter said, but this will depend on the introduction of these various acts that he mentioned that has been noted by the department and the entities, and this our engagement will be driven by the introduction or engagement of these acts. Perhaps more pertinent to our discussions now is the oversight output, and here's the envisaged forthcoming aspects per quarter. So firstly, perhaps looking at engagement with National Treasury on the ring-fencing of specific of funds for specific purposes. And given that this coming quarter, the one we're in now, is quite full already in terms of the normal activities of the committee around the budget. This was being slotted for discussion in the third term, a direct engagement of National Treasury in that regard. So you can see how we can draw the issues from the strategic plan to the annual performance plan. Looking at the SADF human resources plan, which we did already, but slotting another engagement in the fourth quarter, briefing by the audit committee and internal audit function in the third quarter, monitoring the defense work formation activity also in the third quarter, presentations by the military ombud in this quarter and the fourth quarter, briefing on implementation of the AG's recommendation on consequence management, also scheduled for the third quarter, border safeguarding, number of oversight visits, presentations, and also scheduled for the third quarter, procurement and SCM presentations for the third quarter, briefing on the status of the defense review, also for the third quarter. So the Air Force's and Navy's flying hours and sea hours, specific briefing on this matter in the fourth quarter, scheduled for a number of presentations on the office of the military ombuds, that's scheduled for the third quarter, presentations by the Defence Facilities Commission for the second and the third quarter, issues around the sweating of assets, looking at that in the fourth quarter, cyber warfare strategy and implementation is also scheduled for the fourth quarter. That's all related to the DOD in terms of the DMV, looking at oversight visits to the DOD headquarters and provincial offices, looking to schedule that in the third quarter, briefing on the database, also in the third quarter again, briefing by the audit committee and internal audit on the audit action plan, and that's in the fourth quarter. Briefings on the implementation of the AG's recommendations on consequence management, also in the fourth quarter. Briefing on the status of policies, SIAs and MOUs, and that is scheduled for the third quarter. Also referring, we've already had engagements in the first quarter with the appeals board, so that has been completed. But one of the outstanding matters is to have engagement with SAMBA, and that is scheduled for the fourth quarter today. Similarly, gender parity and youth development through business opportunities and training, the fourth quarter, scheduled for the fourth quarter, DMV capacitation and skills enhancement for the fourth quarter, activities to enhance communication with military veterans, also for the fourth quarter. And then this is the crucial one, briefing on the presidential task team on military veterans, and then schedule engagement in that regard in the third quarter. Second to last, looking at Arms Corps, number of oversight visits undertaken to Arms Corps. This was scheduled for this term, but as members are aware, that has to be rescheduled, and hopefully another slot will open up for us to conduct this oversight visit to Arms Corps naval dockyard, Simon Star and Cape Town. And hopefully that can still take place within this quarter. Arms Corps dockyard briefing at the same meeting that will take place. IP exploitation, looking at that in the next term, similar to project sustainability, and here specifically looking at Hubei, Tebara, and Hotel, but specifically Hubei, that is scheduled to take place in the next term. Relationship of Arms Corps and Denel, also in the next term. So really important meetings that we can slot in, hopefully, in the next term. Number of oversight visits undertaken to the CCB, visiting the castle perhaps in the next term. Number of briefings on financial viability as a going concern, also in the next term. And number of reports on the security of the castle, also in the next term. Members might know that there's a lot of aspects mentioned for the next term, but a lot of these can be slotted together in one visit, like this castle control board. One visit to the castle will be able to cover all three of these key issues that were identified. The next is in terms of public involvement, public participation. Again, this will depend on the introduction of the various bills to Parliament. And in terms of international cooperation, it's a big question mark. I see that Peter put in there around the oversight visit to the DRC. That's envisaged perhaps in the fourth quarter of this year. But as we know, there are many factors impacting on potential visits abroad at this stage. But it is good to have it in the plan and take any questions and ask Peter to also assist if there's any questions in this regard.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Sorry, Vem, colleagues, your comments, let me look at the... Mr. Mario, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. Again, compliments to Bill Adam as well. Excellent program. And I think there's a little, you know, there's so many things that we can do and that we must do. One thing I just wanted to maybe raise with you, Chair, with regards to our planning for the year, but also into the future. This SIGLA webinar on defense budget the other day last week was very, very interesting. It's not new things to us. I mean, we've heard that, but it was good to hear it from a panel like that. I just asked myself a question, and looking at our program, so where to from here? What now? What is the next step with regard to those things that we have seen, and in terms of what the minister has said a number of times, what is the defense force that we want? What is the defense force that we need? And I think somewhere we will have to provide for a start of such a process where we can maybe invite the minister and other stakeholders to say, okay, given what we have heard, given what we know, given the budget that we've got, given the commitment or non-commitment from National Treasury, what now? What is the next step? In terms of trying to get to what the minister has described in terms of what does the nation want, what do we need, and I just, whilst I support what Bill Adam has done in the program, but I just think that somewhere we will have to start to addressing the challenges as well, rather sooner than later, because that will be an incumbent process and a program that we will embark on, but somewhere we will have to start with that that challenge as well. Otherwise, excellent for Adam as well. Thank you very much from my side.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. Any other comment? I agree with you that we need to be doing something as a committee, even if it means conducting seminars, conducting a colloquium, you know, creating platforms for
absolutely,
so yeah, that we can bring other people to give share ideas of
yeah,
what needs to be done.
Absolutely,
let's create a platform, Valerie. A platform or platforms for this process, for this item that is raising. Any other colleagues? Again, another outstanding job, and again, this serves as a guide. We can do a lot more than what is provided for here. It's just that we can't depart. In other words, we can't underperform. We can only overperform. Am I correct, Velo?
I would hope so, Chair. Yes.
Yeah. So overperforming, it means doing more. All right. So I think that then becomes the annual business plan for the committee until the end of the term. Your term means, end of the year means December time, isn't it?
Yes, Chair, that's for the calendar year.
So this has been accepted. Thank you very much for this work. You can see that when we were on a short break, you were doing some work. We're also doing some work out there. All right, thank you very much, colleagues, for what you have done. Excellent job. All right, can we then quickly move to the next item? I think it's you again.
Chair, thank you. I think the next item will be presentation on the DOD side of the ATC. So what will happen next is I will present it, and then Peter will run through the key issues in the DMD budget and APP and others. Just to orientate members, this presentation that we have here, this is based on the APP that was submitted to Parliament by the DOD and the budget from National Treasury. And I think it's important to note that we did submit to you, both Peter and I submitted to you an analysis document. So this is just this presentation today is just a short overview of that analysis document. But it's important to perhaps go in detail through that analysis document. It's a lengthy document with a lot of tables in it, but there are some pertinent issues that we highlight in that. In the grey block, you'll see in that document. So, Steve, just to confirm, is my screen visible on your side?
Yes, yes it is.
All right. Just to as a point of orientation, I know not all members could have seen last week's webinar from SIGLA on the defense budget, but it was a very nice event and opportunity for orientation regarding the defense budget. So I just want to highlight some key issues that came out of that defense budget. Starting with the historic perspective that you provided, Chair, when we look at the defense budget this year, it's important to look at the historic perspective and to realize that South Africa is in a difficult situation with very low economic growth, and we need to balance social needs and social spending versus military spending. And I think that is the struggle that National Treasury sits with. So we should keep that in mind when looking at the defense budget. And one of the economists on this panel also said that defense expenditure must be seen in the context of slow economic growth in South Africa. So it's difficult to allocate extra money to defense when there is slow economic growth. So that's one side of the coin. But on the third bullet there, the other side of the same coin that these economists highlighted is that defense in some cases also contributes to economic growth. It's a disputed concept, how much defense actually contributes. But it has been shown in the past that in South Africa, in the long term, defense has contributed to economic growth in the country. The key issue is to find that balance between overly investing in defense but investing in defense to the extent that it contributes to economic growth. Very importantly, it was noted that we must remember that security needs remain permanent. And this means that whether you have economic growth, high economic growth, or slow economic growth, in that time, there will always be security needs. And I think this relates to the requirement in the Constitution to see what are the functions of the defense force in providing security for the state, whether it's slow or high economic growth. The question that came up, and Chair, you mentioned this, is that what we should ask ourselves is, has the expenditure balance tipped in the wrong direction? And then with this, we mean the social expenditure versus military expenditure. Have we now gone in the wrong direction? And Mr. Murray just raised this question, where do we go from here? And Dr. Kandile, Dr. Moses Kandile from the Center for Military Studies, during this presentation, he basically laid out three options. And first option is there needs to be a decision made around, do we reduce our operational deployment and in so doing save costs for the defense force? Do we repurpose the SANDF and redesign it accordingly to focus, for example, just on border security? Or do we reconfigure the SANDF to a minimum core capability with completely reduced ambitions, where we do not participate in foreign peace missions and so forth? And these three are three options, but the key question that you raise is, where do we go from here? And I think it's important to keep this in mind when we look at the budget this year, because the medium-term outlook for the defense budget is definitely not the rosy one. It is under extreme pressure, and hard questions have to be asked about how do we go forward from from here, and what type of defence force do we want, and it is important for Parliament to play a leading role in driving this discussion. And I think I'm glad that it came up just now, Chair, when you spoke about creating opportunities for driving this discussion, and I think that's something we can take forward, and also in conjunction of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, decide how the committees can contribute to that. So, in short, I just wanted to go over this to give members a overview of what was said at the seminar, and just to keep this in mind going forward with the budget. And on the next slide, members, you'll see why it's so important to discuss where do we go from here. This is the 8th program of the Department of Defense budget. And you will see if you adjust it for consumer price inflation on the last column of the table there, you'll see that there is, after adjustment for inflation, extremely high reduction in the overall allocation. So we're looking at a budget that decreases around 7.9 billion rand overall. And if you take that in real terms, after inflation, you see an 18% reduction in the Defence Force allocation. And just for members, you can find this information on page 7 of the analysis document that was sent to you. Please do go through that for more detail. Just to point out the four programs that had the biggest reductions. Firstly, the Force Employment Program with a 25% reduction. However, this one was to be expected because in the previous year it received a lot of extra funds for the COVID deployment. So this basically goes back to normal. But where the problems come in is with our air defense.
Sorry, Vida.
Yes, sir.
Are you contrasting the 2021 budget before COVID with the 2020 budget before COVID and with the 2021 budget?
So, Chair, this is the adjusted, the 2021 budget. This one is the adjusted budget that includes the adjustments for COVID. So where we should take that into account, I will mention it as well. For example, in force deployment, they received a lot of extra money last year for COVID deployment. So the one for this year is basically in line with the 2019-20 again. So we went back to normal for this allocation.
Okay.
Yeah. However, that was where most of the funds went for COVID, Chair, was to the forced employment allocation. So we should still be concerned around the major reductions in other programs. And we'll get into the details, but this is, for example, air defense with a 24% reduction in real terms, defense intelligence with 36%, and general support with 22%. Chair, just to answer your question a bit further, basically, the budget that we see here, we're moving from 54 billion last year to 46 billion. This allocation is aligned with the allocation that the department had in 2016-17. So we've regressed in that sense to an allocation of 5 years ago. And I think that should give us a clear indication of the financial implications. On the next slide, which is based on page 8 of the analysis document, just to look at the key cost drivers of the department. And there's three increases that members can perhaps ask the department to explain better. Firstly, compensation of employees, which has been an ongoing issue. This decreases from an allocation in the previous year of 50 billion to 29.3 billion. So even though it's a decrease in allocation, it is a proportional increase of the budget. Because the budget shrunk so much, a bigger chunk of the budget will be spent on compensation of employees. So we're going up from 57% that was spent on compensation of employees to 63% of the allocation that's spent on compensation of employees. And I think it's prudent that tomorrow and during the engagement that members of the department to explain whether or not there will be irregular expenditure in this regard again. It is very likely because the budget amount for this coming year is lower than what was actually spent on salaries during the previous year. So it's likely that there's again going to be expenditure, and perhaps members should ask the department where they will get the funds from to cover that. The second issue of increased expenditure that requires explanation is the issue of contractors. We see contractors spending going from 2.1 billion rand to 3.06 billion rand, so almost a billion rand extra spent on contractors in an economic climate that is not really conducive for such spending. A lot of the increase in notes is the ministerial cost. The ministry cost of 125.5 million rand for 2021 is higher than the previous year. And a recent study of about 2 years ago showed that the Department of Defense has one of the highest ministerial costs of all government departments. So perhaps questions can be raised as to what can be done to cut the ministerial costs of this ministry. It's quite a significant amount. Other cost drivers that should be noted in terms of decreases, Chair and members, if you look at the economic classification, there's a decrease in fuel, oil and gas from just over 1 billion to 780 million. However, this decrease, it could be related to the COVID spendings last year. There was obviously a lot of money spent on fuel during the previous year for the deployment. And this goes back to normal levels, but it might be important to ask them if there's any impact of the decrease. More importantly, perhaps, is the food and food supplies, the decrease from 1.4 billion to 1.1 billion. That's 300 million less for food and food supplies, and this could have a direct impact on conditions of service. Members know that soldiers receive food at the bases and for deployment. And the 300 billion rand less this year, how will that affect the conditions of service for members in the base? Lastly, very importantly, is the issue of the special defense account. It decreases from 5.2 billion rand in the previous year to an allocation of just 1 billion rand in this year. And what this means, members, over the long term is that there is no money for prime mission equipment acquisition. Our prime mission equipment will become obsolete, and there will be no investment in research and development skills, and that will also affect the defense industry in South Africa. So what is needed is an urgent discussion around this special defense account that also came out in the Sigla webinar, an urgent discussion around the special defense account and how it can be funded, taken forward, and specifically also how to do proper oversight of this account to ensure that it is not used as some people call it, a slush fund. It's very important to ensure that the right oversight mechanisms are in place to also appease National Treasury. Speaking of National Treasury, Chair and members, we included this in the document. Based on the previous BRRR, we just highlighted this again, the responses from National Treasury to this committee. The committee recommended additional funds for border safeguarding. National Treasury said there is no real scope for additional border safeguarding funding. Similarly, the committee recommended ring-fencing funds for the Navy vessel midlife upgrade. Treasury said there is no funds for this. The committee also recommends that the department look at salvaging the SDA. And National Treasury said there is no scope for funding for salvaging the SDA. The committee also recommended that National Treasury should, if possible, allocate extra funds for an exit mechanism to help the DoD streamline its personnel. And again, National Treasury said there is no funds for this, and they also mentioned that the DoD did not take up National Treasury's offer for exit mechanism funding in 2019, when there was money for this. That's just as a background, members, to a discussion on the budget and seeing the point of view of National Treasury, and perhaps you can use this for further engagement as well. Just then, the next 8 slides, Chair and members, will be to run through the key programs. As I mentioned earlier, the Department of Defense has 8 programs, and these are the key factors that came out of each program. So in program 1 is administration. If importantly, we see a decreased allocation to inspection and audit services. That increase is 11.29%. And this is important given the company's previous focus on the need for external audits and audit services. So perhaps posing a question in that regard could be important. Spending on advertising also increases from 38 million to 73 million, which is aligned with the pre-COVID expenditure. So it's a normal expenditure and advertising requested. Expected. However, the question can be raised, is it really necessary given the current economic climate to spend 75 million rand on advertising? Also, the fact that the Department of Defense will not have a military skills development service, MSDS, intake this year. So, why the 75 million rand advertising expenditure if you're not going to have an intake this year? The ministry sub-program allocation increases by 23%. We already spoke about the cost of the ministry. The removal of the targets related to the reduction in the number of audit qualifications. There was a target previously that came for the department to reduce its audit qualifications. And that target has since been removed. So a question could be raised is why this target was removed. And lastly, the defense force has 44 defense attaché offices around the world. And while they fulfill an important role in defense terms, it is perhaps, given the current economic climate, it is perhaps prudent to ask whether we still need all 44 of these defense attaché offices. Specifically, there's less defense ambition and capability to deploy it around the world. Also to note that DERCO is expected to close 10 consulates. Central African consulates around the world. Perhaps it's time for a discussion around whether we need all 44 of these defense attaché offices or some of them could be collapsed into one. In terms of the program two, which is the forced employment program, the budget decreased by 1 billion rand. The allocation to sub-program five, which is support to the people, received a 45% reduction. And this is related to the COVID deployment of last year, which received an increased budget last year, but that is not needed this year for defense deployment. However, despite the big reduction in this program allocation, contractors' expenditure increases by around 30 million rand for the year. So a question could be asked as to why this is needed. Similar travel and subsistence increases from 150 million to 200 million. It could be asked why this increase in S&D is required. And lastly, quite importantly, the 17% reduction in the allocation to special operations. And this could have an impact on special forces operations and training and so forth. So it's prudent to ask how this 17% reduction will impact our special forces. The next program is Program 3, that's the largest program. You can find it on page 15 of the analysis document. Spending in this program, you'll see that the allocation decreases from 16 million to 14.5 million, billion. So around a 2 billion rand reduction, which in real terms is a 16% reduction. And you'll see the main program that received a reduction, I excluded some of the programs, but the main programs that received a reduction is infantry capability, artillery capability, air defense capability, operational intelligence, command and control, and general training. And specifically these first four, infantry, artillery, air defense, and operational intelligence, those are your operational capabilities of your army. And there's significant reductions in this allocation, which could imply significant capability reductions for the SA Army. Crucially, also to note, despite this 2 billion rand reduction, spending on contractors in this program increases from 92 million to 620 million. So it's clear that the question should be asked, why is there this six-fold increase on spending of contractors. Also, something that doesn't make 100% sense is that according to the targets, they plan to train more people this year, but if you look at the general training capability, air defense, you see the overall allocation decreased by 1.5 billion rand, and I think the major focus point in this program is the air combat capability. We see the allocation reduced from 880 million to only 340 million. This is a major reduction, and in the previous parliament, the committee visited one of the Air Force bases in the north, and one of the key complaints of pilots specifically was the lack of funding for flying hours and the lack of opportunities for flying. This is a very big frustration for them and results in skill losses. So this is a major reduction, and the impact of this reduction should be discussed. Contractor increases by around from 1.4 billion to almost 1.6 billion. Fuel, oil and gas also decreases significantly, and this raises the question whether there will be enough fuel for aircraft to achieve its 17,000 flying hours. So the flying hour targets remain the same as in the previous year, but you have less money available for fuel, so how will they achieve that flying hours if there's less money available for fuel in this year? Training and development increases from 57 million to 66 million, despite no MSAs intake, so maybe that also requires explanation. The next program is the maritime defense. Maritime defense program decreases by 680 million rand, and again, the maritime combat capability, that allocation decreases by 30.79% in real terms. And despite this big decrease in the overall allocation to the program, contractors increases from 250 million to 411 million. There's also operating payments that increases quite significantly from 90 to 51 million, and there's not a real explanation for what this entails. And if you look at the target, the C-hour target is reduced from 10,000 to 8,000. It's not necessarily a bad thing, because in previous years, the Navy never achieved their 10,000 hours. So it's more aligned with reality, but engagement on this should be forthcoming as to how they plan to achieve the 8,000 hours. Next is the military health services. This program allocation is reduced by 770 million rand. But very importantly, there's a sub-program called Military Health Maintenance. And the Military Health Maintenance sub-program received no money for the coming year and no funding over the NDF. So this sub-program is completely unfunded over the NDF. And the impact of this should be discussed tomorrow in the engagement with the department. It could have a major impact on the maintenance of our facilities.
So it's down from how much? From what was the last time they posted an application to this one?
Chair, if you allow me, I'll just check with me. Chair, in previous years, the previous year was 167 million. And the years before that, I don't know if you can see my screen, but it was 309 million. It went down to around 200 million. It went down to 120 million. Went up a bit to 160 million, and now it's completely unfunded over the NDF. So it's a significant amount that was allocated to this in previous years.
Okay.
And the impact there can be discussed. And then something that relates specifically to the oversight visit that members had at one military hospital. We saw that first floor that is not complete, that the theatres that are not complete, and because of that, patients have to be outsourced. And this year we see an increase in outsourced services from 260 million to 708 million. So this is a significant cost to the department to outsource patients to private medical service providers. Furthermore, only 7.7 million rand is allocated for machinery and equipment. And this is quite concerning. It's not clear from the National Treasury budget whether this program can purchase medical equipment under other programs. But if only 7.7 million rand is allocated for machinery and equipment, that is a real concern. It will be very difficult to maintain all the equipment in a 3-bed hospital with only 7.7 million rand. So perhaps clarity on that aspect should be asked for. And lastly, there's the issue around one of the targets, which is the targets for the availability of medical stock. And the department insists that it's a classified target, but about 5 years ago, it was not a classified target. So perhaps the real reasons for classifying this target should be asked for. In the previous parliament, this committee noted it as a concern, the levels of medical stock, and it's very difficult to measure and track this now for the committee if this target is classified. So just perhaps clarity on the reasons for the classification of this target should be asked for. The next...
What's on that item on the medical stock? Check whether the Department of Health does post this target in their annual plan, so that when we ask them, we are then able to say, if Department of Health is able to do it, what is stopping you from doing it? Why you decided to classify it? All right.
Okay, then I'll do that, and I'll let members know of the outcome of that investigation.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the next program, Chair members. This is Program 7, Defense Intelligence. This is quite a big decrease. It's the smallest program of the DoD, but we see the allocation decrease from 1.1 billion to 750 million, and specifically the operations sub-program. Their budget is reduced from 640 million to 250 million. Which is quite a significant reduction for their capability. One of the aspects that may require first clarification is the almost 50 million rand allocated to operating leases. It's not clear what this refers to, but it might require clarification because given their small budget, it's quite a lot of money that goes to operating leases. Lastly, the target for defense intelligence products, they have a target every year of the output for defense intelligence products, but this year's target is quite lower than what was achieved in the previous year. So it could be time for NS to increase the target to more realistic levels, which will be a positive contribution from the committee, I think. Lastly, the last program is Program 8, General Support. The program allocation is cut by 1.4 billion rand for the upcoming year. Crucially here, again, we see the defunding of the technology development sub-program. Chair, to create a question, if you go to Program 8, there's a sub-program called Technology Development that received roughly 450 million rand in all the previous years. In this current year, there's no allocation for technology development, and then over the MTF, it is only around 150 million rand a year. So you see a significant reduction from previous allocation to nothing in this year, and then a very small allocation over the medium term. So that we'll get to that in the conclusion as well, but remember this one around the technology development funding. The joint logistical service allocation is also reduced by 30%. Questions can be raised as to the impact of that. Apologies for that.
Thank you. Believe it, bro. It's like I'm cold. Sure. Hey, that is